This is the Canon Cast, a weekly podcast from the Canon, an SB Nation blog about the Columbus Blue Jackets. I am Will Chase, joined tonight by PD. What's going on, PD?
Hey, Will.
And Elaine Shercliffe. What's up, Elaine?
Hey, Will. How's it going?
It's going. It feels like fall, and it feels like the hockey season should be starting, not ending. But what about you guys?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
That makes me sad. It makes me sad.
Yeah, I'm wearing my hoodie. I feel like preseason's around the corner. Instead, we got the Stanley Cup final and a whole bunch of stuff going on in the NHL. But speaking of the NHL, so I wanted to start off with Bill Zito. He is, of course, the new general manager for the Florida Panthers. So Bill Zito is incorporating the value sheet, which is something that he's bringing along from Columbus. Basically, it's a 100% rule. Basically, are you giving your 100% every single day? It's something that, of course, the leaders, Foligno and co, the management came up with in Columbus, and it's something that he's going to be bringing down to Florida. So I wanted to start with that. Elaine, what were your thoughts on that? You know Zito pretty well from Cleveland, right?
Kind of. I mean, like, not super well, but well enough. I think that the value sheet is very important and valuable to a team, but everyone has to be kind of on the same page, and you have to agree with the values, but they also have to fit into what your skill set is as well. So if you go into there and you say, like, our like value is to win, well, you have to like expand upon it and explain why your value is winning and like how you're going to get there to win. I know that the Monsters, I don't know exactly what was on their value sheet when he was around those three seasons, but it was made clear to me that though everyone was on the same page and the leadership crew asked other members of the team what they felt like their 100% was. And so not only did they have the value sheet, they also had like everyone owned their own individual value as well. So I'm not quite sure how it went with the Jackets, but I find it very valuable.
What about you, PD?
Yeah, so I was, when I saw that blurb, I was, you know, glad to hear that the Jackets had something like that. I think for any team or business or charity organization, anything like that, it's very important that everyone involved be in alignment. And, you know, especially for a sports team, management, ownership, coaching, players, everyone needs to be on the same page. Everyone needs to be pulling in the same direction. They need to understand what the identity of the team is. And yeah, as you said, Lane, it's not just to say, oh, hey, we want to win. Like, how? What steps do you want to take to get to that? You know, what kind of players are you bringing in? You know, do the players have the same values? Because that affects, you know, will they get along in the locker room together? Because if you have players that don't like each other, that can cause problems, you know. But if everyone, you don't have to be best friends, but if, as long as they get along or compatible, that can help. And then, you know, yeah, are you bringing in players that fit together on the ice? And do you have coaches that are running a scheme that maximizes the talent of the players you have? Are you getting players that fit the coaches? That sort of thing. I think when John Davidson came in, you know, a big part of what he brought to the team was he helped sort of codify this identity. Like, this is what Blue Jackets hockey is going to be. And now some of it fit the players that they did have when he came in. And then they kept adding players that also fit that identity. And so I think we all have a clear idea of what Blue Jackets hockey is and what a Blue Jacket player looks like. John Tortorella, when he came in, he still fit a lot of stuff that Todd Richards was doing. He was just kind of a different voice for it. And I think in terms of, you know, making sure that the value sheet is followed, you know, I think Torts is better than Richards at holding players accountable, you know, and here, these are our values that you have to adhere to them. And this is what's going to happen if you don't do that. So, and hopefully, you know, it'll be interesting to see how things change going forward, but Davidson's not there. Zito's not there. You know, some staffers are going to Florida with Zito. I'm sure some players, especially from the Monsters, might follow him. You know, will the values change? You know, and as the core of the team develops and some guys, you know, go away, absolutely, you know, Jack Johnson's left, Jubinski, his playing career's done. You know, Foligno's coming up to the end of his contract. So when it's, you know, Jones and Dubois as maybe the core guys, does that change things at all? You know, and if Tortorella moves on in a year or so, how does that change the values? And there's room for change, but again, everyone still has to be on the same page. You know, is ownership and management, are they okay with coaching and the roster changing? And because if you change too rapidly, if not everyone's on the same page, that's when things can fall apart.
Yeah, like I think something that's very important too is even though you might have the same leadership crew from year to year, it's still something that needs to be discussed at the beginning of the year because people change, missing like different parts come in, different owner, like different GMs come around. So every year, I think it's something that needs to be discussed.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we saw on the team with in 2018-19 that I would say that the Russians were not necessarily aligned with the rest of the team because obviously those guys both had an eye towards the future and knew that that was not going to be in Columbus. And for the players that were invested in being in Columbus, you know, that rubbed them the wrong way. And so I think that was a constant conflict that limited the team's ability to have success that season until, you know, that now famous meeting in Vancouver. They're on the road trip in March. Things are going poorly. They had a team dinner and they really hashed things out. And I think that was a matter of them figuring out short-term values. Okay, we're here now. We're in this position. We've got, you know, a couple weeks left in the season. Can we get on the same page? And they did, and they had success from it. But so that's why, yeah, like you said, Elaine, circumstances change. There, they had new players at the deadline. They got to figure out, okay, how can we get on the same page and agree to the same values for whatever period of time, whether it's 2 weeks, 2 years, whatever.
Yeah, this topic kind of brings to mind the human element, I guess, because you know you talk about players and everybody kind of buying in, being on the same page. I think that outside of what you just mentioned with the some of the conflict maybe in the past, I feel like Columbus is at least it seems like they've had good chemistry. I feel like there hasn't really been any, who knows? Maybe there's certain players that don't like each other and we'll just never know because they just kept that behind closed doors pretty well. But it seems like everybody was pretty friendly or really seems to get along. You see it even on interaction on Twitter or just when they're, you know, doing events, goofing around, whatever. They seem to be a very happy bunch, so to speak. Kind of, it makes me wonder when Zito is in Florida and going forward, this is kind of Zito's first real shot at being an NHL GM, obviously. So I'm curious to see kind of how he does and how his philosophies translate, bringing some stuff from Columbus. And I'm curious to see how it, you know, how this wrinkle affects Columbus and Cleveland.
Yeah. A good thing to kind of point out too is that you mentioned chemistry. A good set of goals or a value sheet can make up for the lack of chemistry. So it takes into account if people aren't clicking, it takes into account how to make that work, you know? So like say one of your values or goals is to like have us, you know, work as a team the whole game. So that means like, how are you going to be able to make that effective? And obviously that's like team chemistry. That's just like a small example.
Or an example that comes to mind is the Red Wings teams of the 90s when they brought in, you know, those five Russians. And obviously that, you know, you're going to get some culture shock there.
Right.
And so one thing that Stan Bowman did that was so good is that he, you know, he put those five Russians on the ice together because and he's like, I'm not even going to try to coach them. They did these great things with the Russian national team. Like you guys go over the boards, do your thing, play your style of hockey. And then, you know, everyone else on the team did the style that he wanted and it worked,
right.
You know, but that was a case where, yeah, they're not necessarily going to be best friends immediately with everyone. They're not going to be playing the same kind of hockey with everyone. Now, some of those guys were playing on other teams before they got to Detroit and had trouble adjusting to the North American style of play. But there, if you can, okay, you guys do your thing and the rest of the team does this thing. And they found a way to make it work. So they were being different fit the way that they wanted to be aligned.
Yes, exactly. That's a wonderful example.
The next thing that was interesting was, of course, everybody knows Jesse Puljujärvi. So obviously everybody knows by now that the Jackets did not take him. They took Pierre-Luc Dubois. But what was kind of interesting was there was a report, Elliot Friedman was one that thought or put out there that Columbus could be a team that has interest in Puljujärvi going forward. So I was looking at his stats and it just kind of screams Columbus. Now, he did play in Finland last year and he actually had a 53-point season, but obviously hasn't quite been the guy that most thought upon being drafted. And of course, he played a lot of his, or the first few years of his NHL career in Edmonton. And that is at least right now where he's expected to still be back. PD, can you imagine if the Jackets were interested or actually brought him in? What do you think about that?
Yeah, so I thought this was a very interesting rumor, and I've been kicking this around in my head. So his situation is that he is still a restricted free agent. So the Oilers hold his rights, but he's not under contract with them. And obviously they would be open to trading his rights to some NHL team that would be interested in signing him. And I think as a reclamation project, he's fascinating. You know, there was obviously a lot of, you know, the league was kind of startled when the Jackets took Dubois instead of him because they thought, oh, here, there's this Finnish player. I've considered, you know, the consensus number three player. The Jackets have this Finnish GM and a Finnish director of scouting. Ville Saarinen stepped up to the stage to make the announcement. And then he says this Canadian kid's name and no one expected it. But here, 4 years later, it's obvious that the Jackets made the right choice. Dubois has become a star player for them. And Puljujärvi has struggled at the NHL level. And he bounced back and forth between the NHL and the AHL when he was here. Was obviously frustrated with Edmonton and decided to go back to Finland this past season. But I think if we can get him for a low price, he's worth kicking the tires on. So I'm thinking mid-round pick. We don't have a second or third, but maybe our fourth or fifth, or combine some picks. Because, you know, I don't think he's any more risky than a prospect we would take with those picks. You know, and his numbers in Finland were good. It's obviously, you know, not an elite league by any means, but the fact that he was a nearly point per game player there, I think is encouraging and is something we can build from. And his numbers there were better than his last season over there when he was, you know, his pre-draft season. And I was also thinking of a presentation at CBJ Hack back in February. This college student, Katarina Wu, had built a model for comparing players in different leagues. So you get adjust for the level of talent in every league and the player's position and their usage and things like that to figure out how they would do in a different league or comparing them to a different player. And because she was in Columbus, she gave the example of Dubois versus Puljujärvi. And she, using her model, she found that actually Dubois' pre-draft season was better than Puljujärvi's. You know, so Dubois was playing in Canadian juniors. Puljujärvi was playing in the top Finnish league. So even though Puljujärvi got all the hype, that, yeah, actually translate the numbers and what Dubois did was better. But Puljujärvi's stats this season showed a big improvement, which shouldn't be surprising because you're talking about an 18-year-old versus a 22-year-old. But maybe he's a late bloomer. And I think there are some players that take a little bit more time to get to their peak level. Look at someone like Artemi Panarin. You know, as an 18-year-old, he didn't get drafted. You know, it was only a few years later that he fully bloomed into the player that he was, you know, came over at, age 24 to the NHL, and was instantly a great player. So maybe that's the case with Puljujärvi. Like, it was did not serve him well to come over to the NHL so early. Maybe he should have spent a few more years in Finland, which is hard to do when you take a player at number four. You want them right away, but that may have not been best for them. It sounds like during his time in Edmonton that there were maybe some maturity issues, his mastery of English didn't come quick enough, and that was an issue. So maybe now he's more prepared to come back to the NHL. It also reminds me of Mikhail Grigorenko, who the Jackets have signed, who was a first-round pick, flamed out with the Sabres and then the Avalanche, went back to the KHL, has blossomed there. Now he's coming back for another shot at the NHL. So maybe he's another one who was not ready then, but is ready now. So if we could sign Puljujärvi for a similar contract to what we signed Grigorenko, and if it doesn't cost us too much to get his rights from Edmonton, it could be really interesting. I don't think that he's ever going to live up to the ceiling of being the number four overall pick, But could he be a useful NHL player? I think so, because obviously there was something that the scouts saw to give him the hype. He just didn't have the other skills to make it in the NHL, but he had something that they saw. And I think he probably still has it and could still make an impact.
One thing is, when the Jackets picked PLD over him, I know everyone was upset, but I was like, oh, yes, like PLD, he's going to, I feel like he was someone who was going to grow into his game, because he hadn't quite, he had grown a little bit physically, but I feel like there was so much more for him to grow into. And he already knew how to use his body at a young age. So that means his whole life, as he was growing, he learned how to constantly adapt to that. But it should have been a sign to everyone that maybe Puljujarvi, it's pretty telling when your Finnish GM, who has eyes all over Finland, and the scout, who has eyes all over Finland, and they know all the coaches and all the GMs, and like Jarmo worked with a lot of coaches and worked with a lot of players, so you know he had the best intel out of anyone. It's very telling that he did not draft him and opted for Pierre-Luc Dubois. The other thing is, the Finnish league is a really good league. I know people don't think it's like the best, but it is elite. It's a very elite league. And a lot of players are staying over there now because Timu's, like, it's gotten better. As it was really good in like the 90s, early 2000s, it kind of tapered because everyone came over to North America because Timu Solani. They were all like, oh, we want to have a chance to play with him, play against him, learn from him, play in his system. And then he goes back over and he opens up his like school and has like this fig, it's like shaped like a figure eight. It's actually kind of cool. And so now people are staying more. So we're actually not going to see as much talent as we think coming out of Finland now, just because the opportunity to grow and learn from Timu Solani is there. So it's a lot better now. I totally get what you're saying. Like in the past, it was not on, especially around the time when PLD was drafted, it was not even really on par with the NHL. It was where a lot of AHL bubble players went.
In that presentation, there was a chart that showed, because you could use this model to then compare leagues to each other. And so below the NHL was the AHL, then the KHL, then the SHL in Sweden. And then Liga was about on the same level as the Swiss and German leagues. So, but close to it, but that was kind of the pecking order. So it is not the best league in Europe and doesn't have the best players, but it has very good players, obviously. And I think you could tell more from a player in that league than in the Quebec league, you know, when you're playing against teenagers. So, and that's, which is why, you know,
right,
why they sent Texier to play in Finland for a couple years. And, you know, Daniil Tarasov was there this past year. So yeah, there's value to playing in that league and you can learn from what a player is doing in that league.
Yeah. And then another thing that you did mention was language, and that is super important, and that it shows a lot about GM, coaching, players on the team. Everything. I have heard of, so like Jake Newton went over to, he was a former Monster. He went over to Finland and played. He also played in a few other countries, and he had the gift of learning languages. It was very easy for him. He learned like multiple phrases from German to Finnish to Swedish. Like he just was like having random conversations with people who were willing to teach him. In the same token, though, the team that he was on talked to him. They tried to learn what they could English-wise, and if they couldn't, they worked things out, you know, either through like a Google app or something. Now, on the flip side, Miles Kulis went over and played in Finland, and he was on a team that refused to speak English. Refused. And he was only there for a short time, but I don't know if he's ever learned another language, or maybe he just knows like the typical like French or Spanish, but like when you're in Finland, it Finnish or German is very helpful. And so it made him, he could have excelled more over there, but I think it was hard for him to learn certain things because he didn't know the language at all. And so then you can't read your teammates as well. So like in Edmonton, I wonder, like, are they willing to meet a player where they're at? or they're willing to find a way to meet with that player. Because if you are unwilling to find a way to speak to them or meet them halfway or even get them a class to teach them English, you know, not everyone is able to learn a second language. Not everyone knows the English language well enough. Expecting people to learn the English language when they already know one complex language. And then I start learning more about the AHL players in like Switzerland who know French, Finnish, and German, and like all these languages. And then they come over here and people are like, speak English. And it's like, well, maybe you could find someone that learn that knows one of their four languages. So
Like for example, I think that, you know, Texier still has some insecurities about his English skills, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous because I feel like he speaks
so
it very well.
He's so good at it.
But I think it,
yeah,
being on the team this year, having David Savard and Pierre-Luc Dubois as francophones, yes. had to have made that so much easier for him to have someone that he could rely on that he could speak his own tongue with.
And exactly. I was thinking about,
you know, Puljujärvi coming over and, you know, how mature were each of us when we were 18 years old and like going off to college?
I was very mature.
But imagine, you know, you're going off to college at 18, but then you're going to another country to do it. And then there's also the expectations that people have. You're under a microscope while you're there, as you're still figuring out who you are. You're still trying to learn the culture, learn the language, do your job.
Expected to talk to the media,
so much pressure. And it's not surprising that some people, you know, aren't equipped to handle that. You know, and yeah, it requires a lot of support from the team. And unfortunately, not every organization is up to that task.
Exactly. Now, if Jarmo felt like he could work with him now that they've seen him over there, if he felt like, I trust Jarmo on this one because he does have such an in Finland. Anytime Jarmo says someone from Finland is good, I'm like, okay, I believe you. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to doubt you. So that depends on that.
And interesting, one of his teammates this year, Karpat, was Jussi Jokinen.
Oh yeah, that's another
former Jacket, one-time Jacket. So,
like half a season Jacket,
right?
So, Elaine, you have the Twitter feature, right? You are the Twitter guru of the canon. So, what do you got for us, Elaine?
Okay, so I thought it would be fun and also low key for me, so I didn't have to constantly respond to people to do some polls involving our player reviews.
By the way, this is at CBJ Cannon. Please follow us on Twitter if you're not doing so already.
And if you're not following us, I'm really not sure why, but you need to get on.
You're missing out if you're not following us.
You're missing out on all the GIFs, whatever we want to call them. So I thought some of the tweets, and some of them are not polls, but they had really interesting responses to them, so I wanted to talk about them. But first, I wanted to say the tweet and the choices for the poll and ask you guys what you guys thought and then tell you what the result is, if you guys are cool with that.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first one is the best nickname for Jonas Korpisalo. The choices were Korpisolid, Magikorp, and Korpisavo.
A.
Yeah, I got to agree with Korpisolid. I think it's a really good description too of him. He's like, he's not going to be the best ever, but he's solid. You know, he's corpus solid.
Right.
It's reliable.
I totally agree with that. And so do 53.6% of our fan base. So that's good. I think we have a lot of like Pokemon fans because people often send GIFs of Pokemon. So I'm assuming that those people were the ones that voted for Magikorp. And then I had asked a question about who are your top five untradeables. If you can think of them off the top of your head, what would you guys think?
Yeah, so I wrote an article about that a few weeks ago, obviously. So the ones that were – the three that I listed that I considered untouchable were Dubois, Jones, and Werenski. And then I had another group after that that I didn't consider untouchable, but I was, you know, loathe to move. So I got to throw in my guy Bjorkstrand. So got to make the pick there. And then I'll say Merzlikens, let's say. I said, you know, keep one of those two goalies, but so I'll take Merzlikins then.
How about you, Will?
Yeah, so obviously the first three are Jones, Z, and PLD. I'm trying to think of the team right now. I think PD would be right in terms, like, I wouldn't say, in my mind, like, I would not be in a hurry to trade Bjorkstrand considering the way he seems to be really starting to evolve. But so I will include him in this list. And then
like Texier or Foodie, maybe one of those
guys.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
Put either of them on your list.
I'll say Texier. Foodie probably could be too, but for now I'd say Texier. So I'll say Jones, Z, PLD, Texier, and Bjorkstrand.
Yeah, for me, it's anyone that has a no trade clause is unmovable.
I think you're taking that question way too literally.
But there was a really great answer by, his name is Kurt Diekman. He's one of our followers. It's at Blue Jax, BLOOJAX. It was actually really cute. I loved it. He said Seth Jones, Zach Werenski, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Bobby Mack, Shelly Hawk, and then he was like, also Bill Davidge. He's on the outside looking in only because he's retired and not because he doesn't deserve a permanent home here as well. He's the absolute best.
Aw,
which
that's
is
sweet.
100% true. I would, if I could trade to have him back, I would. I mean, I love who we have for the team, covering the team, but Bill Davidge is a true gem. And then we did the Gavrikov player review, and I had to know, who does everyone think Gabby's calling on his phone whenever he scores a goal or assists one?
I would say his agent to put another zero on the contract offer.
He calls me because I got a call from Russia the other day. No, seriously, though. Yeah, I had a weird spam call from Russia, but the agent's a good one. I don't have a better answer than that. If it's not me, then it's my agent.
Elaine, how many people said Ghostbusters?
No one. Let me tell you.
No!
Okay,
oh, I'm disappointed.
First of all, I was so sad because the amount of people that said he's calling the golf course for a tea time. And I know the timing of when we dropped the article and when we got booted was very close, but my soul hurt. It was like six in a row that was like, for a tea time, calling like Heritage. And I was like, please guys, stop. I can't take this. This is awful. I had said that he's obviously not calling Drake. And then I put up the gif of Drake saying he used to call me on my cell phone. I don't know. I was really proud of that.
Yeah.
And then I asked about Ryan Murray because that's always a hot button issue with everyone. So I asked, do you think it's worth hanging on to Ryan Murray even if he can only play minimal games a year? And the options were yes, no, and if necessary, trade him.
I like Murray. I think he's a good guy and he can play really well when he's healthy, but I'm just so tired of, and it's not even his fault, but it's just so tiring. It's just like, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, again, every year it's the same thing. So I would, he's got a year left on his deal, right? So, I mean, who's going to trade for, I mean, you're not going to probably get much for him in a trade, if anything, but I don't know. I would probably keep him, but I mean, it's just the same thing with the injuries.
Yeah, I think if we could go on like a year-to-year basis and at a lower cap hit, as long as we go in there understanding like, all right, he's only going to be available for like 50 games a year, but we know that's the expectation. Like, I think there's value to having him for that time, you know, because of how good he is when he is healthy, but it would just have to be at a smaller commitment than what we currently have him.
Right. Like if we could get him on that Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, exactly. I was just thinking Trevor Bauer. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, if we could get him on that deal. Because I think some of the younger guys also learn from him because they have a lot of respect for him, even though some of them don't play with him a lot. So that leads me to believe that he's a big presence in practice or in the locker room, off the ice, explaining the game to them. So
and he'd be playing on the third pair, so you can, you know, someone else, right, that you're trying to work into the lineup, have him paired with Murray on the third pair, getting third pair, exactly, minutes in deployment, and yeah, that's a great luxury to have.
Yeah, so 49.3% of people said that if necessary, trade him, which I feel like a lot of us are kind of on that same
sounds
page.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And then I have two more. Sorry. This one is about our boy, Scott Harrington. And I said, where would you like to see Scott Harrington next season? CBJ, other team, or by Felicia?
I think I said by Felicia, but I can't remember. I feel like I did.
Yeah, I would vote press box.
Just the press box? Does it matter what team he's on? Just solely in the
press? Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, like, he's a nice guy if you want to keep him around for practice and because the teammates like him. Yeah, just, you know, don't play him if you don't
need your Ryan Murray insurance.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. He plays the games when Murray's hurt or whatever. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's a twofer, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, he's a good guy, I guess. I mean, I've never heard of, I mean, the only thing I've heard is, like, when we say, oh, Harrington's in the lineup, right. But other than that, he seems like a good guy.
I mean, I don't watch the Blue Jackets games the way I watch the Monsters games. Like, I watch the Jackets games and that's it. I don't watch them three times like I do the Monsters games. I don't dive into it that way, so I don't see, I don't know as much about Scott Harrington, but I feel like he's not as bad as everyone says he is. But also, I'm not like full on analyzing the game for all the games of the season, so I could obviously be wrong. It's not my forte with him because watching it on TV, we don't see him as much because he's usually on the third pairing, and that usually gets neglected on television.
Yeah, his best games are where you don't notice him. But there are times that you do notice him and it's like, oh God, what is Harrington doing? So
where are you going?
It's rarely like, oh wow, look at what Harrington just did. That's great. It's more like, oh God, oh, why are they saying Harrington's name? That's not a good
right. Why is the puck over there now?
Yeah, like exactly.
That. So it was actually almost even on Twitter. There was only 221 votes. So that's probably why like it was 33%. For CBJ, 33.5% for other team and by Felicia. So I guess if you're actually looking at it, it's 67% for being not at CBJ. But it was interesting. There was a lot of comments. There was a lot of arguing in our comment, like in the thread, about how he's a solid. Some people believe that he is very solid as a sixth or seventh D-man and that a team needs one of those to be able to succeed in a sense, that he is more consistent than inconsistent. You know what you're going to get from him for the most part, they were saying. So I thought that was interesting that the fans are actually, there are fans who are bringing up actual like facts for why they like him, not just, oh gee, we just love him or like he's a hottie or like he, like all sorts of reasons. And, like, it was about on ice play. And so I thought that was interesting because our Slack is pretty much like every time he plays, it's like a dumpster fire of comments from us.
He's useful as a spare guy because you can put him That's in the press true. Box and it's not hurting his development because he's at his ceiling. Whereas you don't want to have like Andrew Peak scratch right. when you can be like in Cleveland instead. So if Harrington's that guy that you could, but you know, but that's...
Yeah, I mean, I do think that Peak should have played over Harrington during the playoffs.
Yeah, the one game Harrington got in, yeah, there's no excuse for putting him over Peak.
Yeah. But who knows? It could be a contract thing. I know sometimes coaches and GMs don't like to say that they sometimes play to a contract, but sometimes like you gotta wonder. Seriously. I was listening to what is it called? Where's My Stick? I think it's what it is. It's a podcast. It's an all women's podcast about Pittsburgh and they talk about all hockey. And I went back a few episodes because if I like it, I want to continue in succession. And they spent the whole time just trashing Jack Johnson about how they're like, why is he here? Why aren't these people playing? Why are we trading this guy and not trading him? And it was just like, oh, wow. It's like listening to Columbus fans.
So it was pretty great. The funny thing is that it was so predictable 2 years ago when Pittsburgh signed it. We knew it was going to be disaster. And it has been.
Yeah.
I love it.
And then the final one, which will segue into our next segment, is... if you could describe Elvis Merzlikins with an Elvis song, which one would it be? And I put Burning Love, Trouble, A Big Hunk of Love, and Good Luck Charm. And I don't know how many people actually knew what these songs were.
Are they Elvis songs? They're all Elvis songs, right?
Yeah. And there were other ones I was going to pick, but I was like, I don't know how many people are going to vote based on the song.
I actually got mine. Well, so he shut out Vegas. So, like, well, hold on.
Viva Las Vegas.
Viva Las Vegas. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, that's it. That's it for me. I was about to say, wait, that's not a song. Yeah, of course.
It was perfect. Yeah, his first career shutout was in Las Vegas. Like, it was so perfect.
That's why I did the poll.
My off the board pick would be A Little Less Conversation because of how Torrance kept him from talking to the media.
That's good.
Took over as starter. So.
Yes, that was originally one of the choices. And then I was just like, what if people don't know these songs? Like, I don't know how into Elvis people were. So I picked ones that were a little bit more saucy, I guess you could say, with the title.
A Little Less Conversation is also the best Elvis song. And comments are closed on this. So.
But the consensus among everyone was that he's a big hunk of love.
Yeah, that's
fair. That was a 27.5%. So
that segues into our last topic, which is about the awards. And last week, Elaine and I were recapping who had won some of the awards to that point and projecting who might still win. And now we have the winner of the Norris Trophy for Best Defenseman. That went to Roman Josi of Nashville. Seth Jones finished 14th. Zach Werenski was 8th in the voting. Then for the Calder, Kyle McCarr won that. Elvis finished 5th in the voting in that one. For the Hart Trophy, which was the league MVP, Leon Draisaitl of the Oilers took that home. Connor Hellebuck won the Vezina. Elvis was 5th as well in that voting. And then Elvis also made the all-rookie team that was announced today. Yeah, as far as the Hart Trophy, I know that Seeds was all in on McKinnon. I mean, I can't argue with any of them, Panarin, McKinnon, or Draisaitl.
Yeah, I was surprised that he got both the Lindsay and the Hart. So, you know, Lindsay's voted by the players and the Hart's voted by the media for most valuable player. For me, what it comes down to is of the three finalists, right? McKinnon, Panarin, and Draisaitl. If you were building a team and got to pick one of those guys, would you pick Draisaitl?
I hate you for asking that question because I don't want to answer it and make CC right.
And I think it'd be worthwhile if the league had a, you know, most outstanding player and then a most valuable player.
Yes.
And we have awards to give to players who rack up the points. You know, this is talking about most valuable player. And so I would have given it to McKinnon for just how insanely good he has gotten and has, you know, carried Colorado as a lot of the other great players on the team were hurt in the early part of the season. He carried them through that. So, and then Panarin, I think, is a better all around player than Draisaitl is. So, Draisaitl had a very nice season, but yeah, it's not what I would have picked.
But these awards, they do not favor defense.
Okay. Neither does the Norris.
No, but that being said,
neither does the Norris.
Yeah,
but it did this year. Because often they'll go to, like, the defenseman who puts up the most points, which would have been, like, John Carlson this year. But instead it went to Roman Josi, who I think that was a very worthy pick for a guy who is actually good at the defensive part of the game. So the voters did get – I thought the voters got right. And I was really glad to see Elvis place 5th in both the Vezina and Calder. So – and I really wanted him to be a finalist for the Calder. I knew that the winner was going to be either McCarr or Quinn Hughes from Vancouver. Both those guys are tremendous young defensemen. So I knew it was going to be one of them. But I thought that, Elvis was more impactful for his team than Kubalik was for Chicago. And then 4th was Adam Fox of New York. And again, I thought Elvis had a more impressive season than either of those two guys. But he got some votes, and so I appreciate that recognition for him.
Yeah. Well, Kubalik, like I said on the pod last week, if they were voting during the bubble, he totally would have won it or been even closer. He helped along the Blackhawks a lot during the season when everyone decided to, like, not show up. he was still showing up. But it didn't matter if, like I said last week too, if he didn't show up, they were still going to suck. So yeah, Elvis, I was just so glad to see that Elvis made it in the top five of two awards and then made the all rookie team. Like, he deserves that. I mean, I feel like he deserved a little bit more when it came to the Calder, because you only have one shot to be a Calder winner. It's nice to see CBJ be recognized because a lot of different people are voting on these. Each category isn't just the media. Some is the GMs, some is broadcasters, some is media, some is players, some is just the writers. Like, it's nice to see that CBJ was a little bit heavier on the ballots this year.
Yeah, and I had predicted that, or was hoping that Wierenski would get some Norris votes, so I was glad to see that he was up there in the top 10 for that. I think that's very worthy because he had the best season of his career, was impactful on both ends of the ice. A little surprised that even Jones got it, but I think maybe because of his injury and the effect that had on the team, that I think showed how valuable he was to what the Jackets were doing defensively.
I mentioned that in the player review too. Yeah.
I was just saying, that actually kind of brings up a little something about what we were saying about Ryan Murray. When he went down, though, when Jones went down, though, we didn't have a ton of defense to really, like, replace him, per se, or, like, slot in. And so maybe that is where it's important that we have defensemen who are notoriously healthy, even if they're really good when they're healthy.
So the plan would be to bubble wrap Ryan Murray until Seth Jones goes down. Then you can put Ryan Murray in there. He shouldn't be
playing. We can keep him in his own bubble. We know bubbles work.
So Ryan Murray is the second. There we go. He's the first string that should only play second string just until you really need him.
And it's so I would say that Ryan Murray is the break glass in case of emergency. Yes! Except that when you smash the glass, then it would hit him and then he'd get hurt as well. So that's maybe a bad idea.
It's so true.
So real fast before we go for the week, I have to get your guys' predictions. Who wins game two tonight between Dallas and Tampa? I'm all Stars. Let's go. I want to see Stars do this. I think PD is taking Tampa, but I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are.
I just have no clue. A part of me is like, Tampa would be fun, but also having Todd Richards win a Stanley Cup when he could have won one here, although he couldn't have won one here at that time, but I digress.
He won last year.
But I don't know. I think it'd be fun to see Dallas win. Like, regardless, it's a Southern hockey finals. And I am sure that there are people in Canada who are just having a meltdown about it.
Well, at least it's going to be, handed off in Canada. So
true.
So for Jack's connections, we've got Todd Richards and Curtis McElhinney with the Lightning. And then Blake Como is on the Stars. So either way, there's going to be a former Jacket winning it, which is cool. I think the Lightning are the better team. The better team on paper. They are, I think, deeper. They're more well-balanced. I think there's talk that might get Steven Stamkos back, which will help because, like, Braden Point's a little bit banged up. So I think they've maybe had to go through more than Dallas has had to. Dallas, coming into the Cup Final, they had a negative goal differential for the postseason,
they looked at those stats and they were like, we're so good. You tell us we're bad, but guess what?
but I don't want to take anything away from it because they've done what it takes to win. Anton Khudobin is playing out of his mind, which you need a hot goalie to get to this point. They've been getting goals from all throughout the lineup. You know, it's in game one, it was not, like Sagan and Ben scoring goals. It was, Joel Kiberiantse got on the board and like Jamie Oleksiak, these guys that you're not expecting to carry the team. So
they just keep defying the odds. Every time.
And they've been a very fun team to watch in the postseason. So I don't want to begrudge them that it's an entertaining matchup. I would love if it went seven games because I think it's
seven games, seven overtime.
Oh yeah. Just go. Yeah. That would be fantastic. But I do think game one, I knew that Dallas was going to win because, they hadn't played since Monday. They were rested up and Tampa had played twice since Dallas's last game. Both games went to overtime. So they look like a team that was coming off a couple overtime games. So I think they will have time to recover now. I think they will figure out how to beat Dallas because they beat Columbus and Boston and the Islanders. And these are all similar teams that just suffocate you, keep you from getting high danger shots. That's what Dallas does. But Tampa figured out how to beat the other teams pretty easily. So I think they'll figure out a way ultimately to beat the Stars, but it's going to take six or seven games.
I like Dallas. I think Tampa Bay probably should win the series on paper, obviously, but I don't know. I'm all in on Dallas, and I want to see Dallas take game two tonight.
All right.
But we'll see. Elaine, did you say, or you said you weren't, you didn't know who to pick?
Yeah, I didn't. I don't know. I'd rather have the Stars, but honestly, it's going to be good hockey, so.
It just befuddles my mind because, you know, I keep thinking Dallas isn't going to win. They're not going to beat Calgary. They're not going to beat Colorado. And then they just keep winning. It's like I keep forgetting Dallas is, I mean, not forgetting, but it's like when they were in that Vegas series and they went up 3-1 in that series, I was thinking that they had just tied the series at 2. And I was like, wait a minute, they were up 2-1. Now they're up 3-1. This team just keeps boggling my mind. But anyway, we'll see what happens. Credit to both teams who have gotten to this point. So that will do it for us this week. We will return next week. And as always, you can follow us at CBJCannon on Twitter, jacketscannon.com, and we will talk to you next week. Be sure to subscribe to the CannonCast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you can catch every episode. Leave us a review and a rating. And as always, we welcome your thoughts and feedback. Go to jacketscannon.com for more Blue Jackets coverage from us and follow us on Twitter at CBJCannon. Our theme music is the song Green Eyes by Angela Pearlie and the Howlin' Moons. Check out angelapearlie.com for more music and show dates.